to keep from high, and I'm bound to keep on right. I got one more silver dollar, but I'm not gonna let them catch me, no, not gonna let them catch the midnight rider. On the Fan, McMonagle here with you on our 5-hour midnight ride as I take you all the way to 5 a.m. in the warm-up show on this now Wednesday morning, 888-808-1019. Taking your phone calls on that number till then. We got Fleegelman back in the house. Manny hanging out for another minute. And we'll start with the Knicks. I know, listen, it's the World Series week. Don't get me wrong. We're going to get to the World Series. But we got to start with the opening of the Knicks season as we look for the Yankees. After the Liberty now, it's, you know, I don't know if you want to call it the end of the championship drought or not. Obviously, they just brought a championship and they will have a parade. But as we talked about the teams that had chances to win the championship, the optimism from the New York Yankees, what became of the New York Mets, the optimism that we had, believe it or not, for the New York Jets. And clearly, the optimism for the New York Knicks. And they opened their season with an absolute dud against the Boston Celtics. Now, I talked about this the other day that, you know, it's going to take time, right? Whenever you break up a team, they've added two key pieces in Bridges and Towns. And Bridges, I mean, he's his start to this game is going to be a focal point of this conversation. Around a lot of Knicks fans, he didn't look comfortable. The shot looked unfluid, for lack of a better term. It was kind of ugly at times. He found it a little bit in the second half. But I mean, ultimately, this game was a statement. And you were hoping the Knicks could be the one to make a statement. Because right now, the Knicks are perceived as Philadelphia has obviously improved, but they've got the injuries even now to start the season. Embiid's not going to start the season for opening night. And the Knicks were here to make a statement that they are the second best team behind the defending champion Boston Celtics, that they are a team that's going to compete for a championship, that they are a threat inside this Eastern Conference. And for one night, on the night the Boston Celtics got their rings and the night they celebrated their championship opening night of this season, the Knicks did nothing to make you feel like any of the statements I just made half a second ago are accurate. Because the Boston Celtics just absolutely came out and ran wild all over them and shot an ungodly percentage from the three-point line, hitting 29 three-pointers, tying the record. I believe they broke the record for most three-pointers in a half. And they end up shooting a three-point percentage of 47.5. But that's because the last 4 minutes of the game were strictly just throw up threes and try to break the record. That's how this game ended. It ended with the Knicks in embarrassing fashion as the Celtics, for no good reason, the game is decided. They're just throwing up threes to try and break a record. That's the kind of evening it was in Boston for the New York Knicks. And as, again, it's one game. I don't think it's any reason to get overly concerned. And you thought maybe this Knicks team, again, trying to gel here with new players. They've, you know, that core that was so good for them down the stretch that really felt like only injuries stopped them from being the team we hoped they could be and challenging the Boston Celtics. It was going to take time with this new starting lineup. It's going to take time for Towns to figure out his game. It's going to take time for Bridges coming over here, changing teams in this city, adding the pressure of being a Knick, joining his friends from the, now it's only the Villanova 3. But what does bother me a little bit and what scares me a little bit is the idea that this team is supposed to be one of their strengths with Bridges, with Anunoby, even Josh Hart to an extent, is the perimeter defense. And listen, everything that went in the air in the first half went through the hoop. I get it. Sometimes there are just nights where you hit everything. And the Boston Celtics, whether it was Tatum, who's 8-for-11 from behind the arc, whether it's Horford 3-for-5, Holiday 4-for-6, Brown 5 for 9. I mean, everything that went up came back down. So I understand that. But if you are going to compete with this Boston team, we talk about size, even though Porzingis clearly wasn't playing in this game. And you've got to control them at the three-point line, and you have to have some perimeter defense, and you feel like that's a strength of this Knicks team. With Anunoby, since he came here last January, what his defense brings, he's one of the best, if not the best, perimeter defender in the NBA. Bridges is one of the more, you know, motor, hustle, defensive guys in the NBA. This is supposed to be a strength of this team. And for one night, the Boston Celtics reminded everybody who is the Eastern Conference champion, who is the NBA champion, and who is the team to beat in the East, because they came out and absolutely dominated the first half of this basketball game, and the second half didn't even matter. And so the Knicks had a statement on this opening night to start a season that, without question, is the most anticipated, hyped up, and, you know, thought of actually competing for a championship. You could argue this is the most talented Knicks team that has hit the floor. Going back to the mid-90s teams, better than 99. Like, that's how, that was in, you know, short season, eight seed, ended up making it to the NBA Finals. We all love Sprewell. We all love Camby. We all love Allen Houston. I mean, right now, when you talk about the offensive prowess of what they could put on the floor, with Brunson, Towns, Bridges, Anunoby, this is as talented a Knicks team as we've seen forever. And this is a team that's supposed to compete with a championship and a team that's supposed to compete with the Boston Celtics. And I understand getting your feet wet. And I understand this coach, this team, it's going to take some time. I still feel like they're a very good team. I still feel like we will find them at the end of the year, one of the top teams, if not the top team, right behind the Boston Celtics, who are clearly unbelievably talented. But for one night, they had an opportunity to come out, start this season, and stare the Boston Celtics right in the face and make a statement to Boston that we are here, we are your competition, forget Philadelphia, forget Cleveland, forget the Pacers, forget everybody else. The New York Knicks are here, and we are the team you are going to have to beat if you want to get back to an NBA Finals. If you want to go back-to-back NBA champions, this is the team you are going to have to contend with all year long. And it was a joke 10 minutes in. It's a frustrating, disappointing, kind of embarrassing evening for the New York Knicks to start their season. And to allow that many three-pointers, and to have the game come down to literally just shooting practice at the end of the game, trying to break some record. I mean, they didn't care. They didn't care about trying to beat the Knicks. They didn't care about making a statement to the Knicks. They didn't care about saying, hey, we're the best in the East. We're going to still run our offense. We're going to show you the entire game that we're better than you. It came down to, we don't care about the Knicks. We want this dopey record. We're going to put up as many threes as we can and have a fun night. We'll get our rings. We'll hit more three-pointers than anybody. We'll blow the Knicks out by 30 points. No big deal. This is what we do in Boston. One game. Nothing to get too excited about. Nothing to get too worried about. Bridges did not play well in this game. The shot had a bit of a hitch in it. I don't think if you remember last year, he went through a stretch of about, 2.5-3 weeks with the Nets where he was just awful offensively. This is his first game with the New York Knicks in Boston, going up against the defending NBA champions, you know, trying to make a statement, a lot of pressure on this game to open the season. Blah, he's, you know, him coming here, DiVincenzo leaving, that kind of thing that happened. A brand new kind of starting five here, trying to gel together, a little bit of pressure on him to step up and be an offensive threat here. And he had a miserable start to his Knick career in the first half of this game, no doubt. And it's something to watch. And again, he is a bit of a streaky offensive player. He did go through a real downturn in the middle of the season last year where he couldn't find the bottom of the net. And the shot looked ugly to start this game. But ultimately, it's not so much that they lost. It's not so much that this team wasn't completely gelled first game out with this new starting five. It was that the Boston Celtics came out without Porzingis, getting their rings, chucking up threes, hitting everything, going right at what we thought was going to be one of the better aspects of this team, the perimeter defense. And by the end of it, it's, hey, let's just throw up every three we can and hope to break some dopey record. And it just felt like the season has started now, and the Knicks have done themselves a disservice, if anything, in the narrative of, hey, we are the team to compete with you. We are the team that's going to be the thorn in your side. We are the team you're going to be looking at in the standings come the end of the season and trying to make sure you capture the one seed. And instead, it turned into a damn joke. Not a great night for the New York Knicks. Not the opening of the season we expected from a team that we expect to contend for an NBA championship. Just not the night. 888-808-1019. We could talk about it. We'll get to the World Series, obviously. And, of course, I mean, we just found out the tragic news of the passing of Fernando Valenzuela at age 63. It literally just happened as I was walking in. The Dodgers announced it. I mean, Fernando Valenzuela and Fernando Mania was, you know, took this country by storm and took baseball by storm in 1981, the last time the Yankees and the Dodgers played in the World Series. I mean, this is right upon the eve of the World Series. Just heartbreaking news for a guy who of Mexican descent was a, you know, a legend to the Mexican people, who took baseball by storm, pitching his going 8-0 to start his career in 1981 with a 0.5 ERA, winning the Rookie of the Year and the Cy Young that year, helping be part of the Dodger team that beat the Yankees after losing to them in 77 and 78, and just add, you know, one more thing to this World Series that has a million different angles to it and a million different storylines. And now, obviously, this is going to be something that's, you know, unfortunately is going to be a sad story around the World Series. I'm sure the Dodgers are going to honor him. I'm sure they're going to honor him on the TV broadcast, rightfully so. And just one of the great stories, really, in Dodger history, one of the more fun stories, one of the stories of guys just, you know, Doc Gooden kind of taking the league by storm in 84, Fernando Valenzuela taking these young players that come up and take the league by storm. And, you know, as Ohtani and Judge and the superstars are out in this series, Betts and Soto and Freeman and Stanton, to lose one of the real heroes of the Dodgers' history. You know, someone who was a part of the last time that these two teams played in the World Series and was such a key, integral part of that team. It's just a really sad story on the eve of what hopes to be and promises to be just one of the bigger World Series we've ever seen. I mean, right now, the buzz for this game to start on Friday night, this series, Dodgers-Yankees. I mean, there are people out there who think it's bad for baseball. They're crazy. We can get into that a little bit, 888-808-1019, and the idea that the two teams with the highest payrolls and, you know, like this happens all the time. Last year was Texas and Arizona. Like, what? What? I mean, this doesn't happen that much, that both one seeds, that these two high payrolls. I think it's been a handful of years since the highest payroll won. I think it was the Boston Red Sox in 2018 was the last time the highest payroll in baseball actually won the World Series. Baseball has been had as much parity in its champion as any sport, as we watch, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs win every single year. As we've seen the dynasties that continue to happen in the NBA, Golden State, you know, though the Celtics sure look like a team that can go back-to-back. You know, LeBron James in the NBA Finals, whatever team he's on, every single year. The parity inside baseball has been as good as any sport. And so to get this series that everybody is going to be excited about, this this World Series that is going to captivate both coasts, big markets, superstars, Hollywood, New York City. I mean, as we get ready for Friday, it is going to be as much a spectacle as this sport has had in a long time. And unfortunately, I don't know the circumstances around it. I don't know how he was feeling. I don't know the health of Fernando Valenzuela, but it certainly could have been someone who could have been there, been a part of the festivities, you know, been celebrated as a key member of the team. The last time these two teams played in the World Series, one of many, the most prolific matchup in the sport's history. And it's just a sad story on the eve of what promises to be an incredible World Series. We'll get more into the World Series. There's a lot of storylines, some fun quotes. Nestor Cortez saying one of the best quotes I've heard in a long time. I am pumped for Nestor Ohtani. I'll tell you that right now. I am pumped for the moment where Nestor is on the mound, you know, giving him the delay, holding his leg up in the air for 3-4 seconds before he throws the pitch. I am ready for it. I am ready for this World Series. I am pumped. And if only the Knicks were ready for the season. 888-808-1019. We'll take your calls next right here on The Fan. We'll get to the football as well. Of course, Rogers spoke on Pat McAfee, so I'm sure something interesting was said there. There's always a conversation around the Giants and Daniel Jones as they prepare for another primetime game with the primetime QB.
Start some trouble and call The Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 1224. Mick Monaco here with you. Just getting underway in our 5-hour midnight ride. Taking you all the way to the warm-up show, 5 a.m. on this Wednesday morning. A little bit of Knicks to open up the show, coming off the season opener. I mean, listen, it's nothing to get too excited about. It's just an ugly way to start the year of a very promising season. And the one thing I'll say is, it's just, you figure one of the strengths of the team is their perimeter defense. That's one of the strengths of the team. Anunoby is arguably the best perimeter defender in the sport. And you just assumed that that's a strength. And now, it doesn't mean it won't be. Doesn't mean it can't be. Doesn't mean it isn't. It wasn't last night. And they happened to, everything that went up went in. It's one of those nights. The Celtics did have a bit of a magical night. But on some level, it's your responsibility to make sure you cover and you fight through screens and you get better perimeter defense and not allow them to shoot over 60% from the three-point line in the first half. Like, you got to do a better job. And it was an opportunity to come out, start the year with a statement that we are the New York Knicks, like the new song says, which I have a tough time enjoying. I don't know why. Some things are just, you know, we all laugh and mock Hollywood for, you know, every sequel and no new idea, and they're remaking this and remaking that, and some things are just better off untouched and left to the way they were originally made, the perfect way they were made. Yeah, I think the We Are the New York Knicks song falls in that category. It was a song that captured a moment in time. I really don't think we need to redo it. I think we could come up with another Knicks song. Jose Iglesias has free time now. See if he can come up with another banger for the Knicks. But just an ugly, ugly first night. But we are World Series focused, baby, as the New York Yankees and the Los Angeles Dodgers are going to go at it starting on Friday. I can't tell you how excited I am for this. We're going to get into the myriad of different things. I'm saving my predictions for Friday morning. We have a full week of this. There's still plenty to do, plenty of matchups to get into. It sounds like Freddie Freeman is going to play. They announced that Cole is going to start game one. Not that anybody doubted it. I assume Rodon is going to start game two. Nestor Cortez looks like he's on the roster, which is huge for this team. Huge. It also sounds like he's going to be added to the bullpen. They're not going to take out Meza or another pitcher, so one of the bench players are going to come off. We'll discuss whether or not that should be Trent Grisham. Should that be Dominguez? I suppose you could even make an argument for for birdie. So there's a lot of things to get to as we get to the World Series here. 888-808-1019. Mark in California. What's up, Mark?
What's going on, Chris?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
A little more pumped up. I mean, tonight, you know, Knicks lost as well. But listen, it's the first game.
Yep.
It's going to take them some time to gel. I just don't understand why the frick he's playing Campaign 21 minutes. Tyler Collett came off the bench 5 minutes, hit a three. Like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, it's like the thing is, he's going to play the veterans over the rookie. You already know that.
Yeah.
He cares a lot.
Well, that's what, and
anyway,
I hear you. And McBride's performance is one of the positives of this game. He was great.
No, they would have got blown out without his three.
Yeah, I mean, they would have got blown out. And yeah, he played Payne. Again, look, Tibbs, everybody played. That is not typical Thibodeau. That is not going to last. It was opening night. They got blown out. Like, you could tell early on they weren't going to be in this
game. Their bench is disgusting, though. Their bench is disgusting. It's not, you know, it's like Precious went down. And I don't even want to get into that. But still, you know, I think they're going to bounce back. It's their first game. You go up against Boston defending champions. They shot lights out. You know, they were at the end, they were just chucking threes in and trying to break the record. But it's crazy, man. Like, this Yankee Dodgers World Series, all my buddies, especially my boss, I was looking to go to the game. It's like $1,300.
Yeah,
top right.
For standing it's, room. Standing room only is like $1,300.
I'm a diehard Yankee fan. I may never see a Dodgers Yankee World Series, but I'm not going to drop this.
I don't blame you. It's
dude,
crazy.
I went to the Giants Super Bowl in Arizona.
Yeah.
And tickets for me and my dad were $1,300 combined.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
and that's one game. You're 100% right. This is crazy. Yeah. The asking price to get in, and I mean,
imagine how much it's going to be in New York.
It's
ridiculous.
Like, I know. No, I mean, that's where
$1,000 to sit behind home plate.
Oh, it's crazy. I think the last time I checked, I saw standing room only $1,700 at Yankee Stadium. I mean, it's crazy.
It's going to bring baseball so much money.
Oh, yeah. It definitely is, and you know what else it makes me worried about a little bit. It makes me worried about what kind of crowd they're going to get to. Might not get the Yankee crazies at $1,700 a ticket. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm hoping that the atmosphere is crazy. I'm hoping the atmosphere is loud. But anytime tickets get up to this kind of level, you're worried about the people who, you know, now have, you know, want to be at the event or be at the hot moment. And
it's the World Series.
And it's not the traditional Yankee fan that's there on a night-in, night-out basis.
No, it's not. I was at game one of the Dodger-Yankee series. I think it was in June in Dodger Stadium where he brought in, I forget who he brought in, but he was DFA'd like right after that. And the Judge hits the single to left field. That would have basically won the game for the Yanks. They were playing without Soto.
Yeah.
It took two out of three, but I think if Soto played, they sweep the Dodgers. Because that last game they won, game two was close. It was 8-4, but this series, Chris, I just don't want to set expectations really high, but it can go either one of two ways, right?
Okay.
I mean, the Dodger lineup, to me as a Yankee fan, doesn't scare me, because just like Dodger fans, when you get past, you know, Glaber and Stanton, you know, and Soto and Judge, the lineup becomes, outside of Volpe, you know, I think within Wells, Verdugo, and Jazz, because Anthony Rizzo's hitting the ball, his defense is kind of shaky.
Mm-hmm.
But those three guys have like two homers. That's it. Jazz hit one in the ninth inning, and then Wells hit another one. That's it. So the rest of their lineup outside of those guys is very, very weak. And listen, the Dodgers' pitching, just not very good. If the Mets can score five runs, what can the Yankees do? Which their offense is better. And by the way, in 11 games, the Dodger bullpen was shut out four times. They shut their opponents out four times. But in six games, they gave up five-plus runs. So outside of Yamamoto and Jack Flaherty, if you're going to go Walker Buehler, who could pitch game seven against New York, you could have Cole 1-5-7. Cole and Rendon.
1-4-7.
1-4-7. So Rendon and Cole is better than anything the Dodgers have faced this playoff. That's a fact.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean,
Chamonix is great. Don't get me wrong. Chamonix is great, but he's not a Cole.
Yeah, and by the second game, by game six, he was out of gas. You could tell he publicly admitted he had hit a wall. You didn't get the same Sean Manaea that you did at different times. He pitched well in game two, but it wasn't going to happen for him. I think that's fair. Now, you got to see better out of Cole, who only pitched pitched three games and really only had one good one. The clincher game four in Kansas City was a great performance. Other than that, a little shaky. So it's going to be big for him. I think that is a conversation I was going to get into tonight on whether or not you could do similar to what you did in 2009. If you remember the 2009 team, three starting pitchers. That's it. Everybody went on short rest. Everybody. CeCe, Burnett, and Pettit were the only three starting pitchers who threw in that entire postseason. And so now, could you ask Cole to go 1-4-7 and pitch games 4 and 7 on short rest? If needed, obviously, for game 7. If you don't pitch him in game 4 and you give him normal rest, or even it would end up being, yeah, a normal rest on game 5, that takes him out for game 7. You're not going to do it on 2 days rest. So do you throw him game 4, Luis Gil game 5, and make sure you can get twice, you can get 3 starts from Gerrit Cole? That's an interesting question. I'll see how the Yankees handle it. I don't know. I don't know how they handle it. It'll depend on where the series is. I think if they're down 2-1 after 3, you might see it. If they're up, I don't know. Certainly if they're up 3-0, you won't see it. But you could see Cole in game 4, set him up for short rest on 4 and 7. And yeah, listen, the Dodgers pitching, you know, the bullpen has also been very good. I mean, they were part, obviously a huge part, of that scoreless streak between the last two games against San Diego, the opening game against the Mets, where they had 30-plus consecutive scoreless innings. They only have one left-handed pitcher, which makes me feel a lot better about this Yankee lineup. Not just the fact that they have struggled against lefties. Because, yeah, no lefty starting pitching, just one lefty in the bullpen. You can live with a lefty or two in the bullpen. So it's not like, oh, they can't hit lefties. You know, it's more than just that. It's also the way you can deploy the lineup. Like, they did not want to stack lefties at the bottom of the lineup against Cleveland because of Herrin, and they had multiple lefty relievers. And so you don't want to stack Stanton and Judge together. You want to put a lefty in between there for matchups there, as well as setting up the bottom of the order to have another right-handed hitter and not open up a lane for a lefty to come in and get 3-4 lefties in a row. That's how many lefties the Yankees have in the lineup. So, but if they're not worried about that, if it's one lefty, you feel a lot better about Stack and Judge and Stanton, which is a right now, you ask a starting pitcher, you ask anybody to get through Soto, Judge, Stanton. That is a difficult trio to get through right now. And it felt like with Wells and then later Jazz, it felt like you had an out in between there. But he did that to set up the bottom of the lineup, which is hard to argue because the bottom of the lineup was terrific and won a couple games for the Yankees. And you don't want strictly all lefties, but the Dodgers don't present as much of an issue with that left-handed pitching that the Cleveland Guardians did. So we'll see if the lineup changes. We'll see if they can get to this bullpen, because we've seen you get into a long series, you can't constantly be throwing your same bullpen guys to the same hitters. Gattis was one of the best relievers in the sport this year, and eventually Soto saw him for a third time, I believe, and he had nothing for him. Soto was, as he said, I owned him. I had him. I was comfortable with every pitch. Eventually, you get into these long series, you can't throw this much bullpen. You can't have even your top-end guys who might be super talented and really good and having great years and great stuff. You can't have him face Judge, Soto, Stanton for a third, fourth time in a long series. They know what's coming. They know how they're going to be attacked. They know what the pitches look like. They're very comfortable. It's day after day after day. Plus, you wear them down. Plus, they see them all the time. Like, the Dodgers right now are relying on so much of the bullpen. And that's why, for me, the bullpen between the two teams is the biggest matchup to look at. Whoever's bullpen's more successful probably wins this series. But you could say whoever's starting pitching gives you more depth could win this series. And without question, the Yankees have the opportunity, at least, the opportunity, who have the starters who I would feel more confident can go deeper into games. Cole can go deep into a game. Rodon can go deep into a game. We haven't really seen it from Yamamoto, and Flaherty has to be really on his game to do that. So I like the pitching matchup for the New York Yankees. I do. Kevin in Hartford. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, Chris, what's going on tonight? How
what's
you doing?
What's up, buddy? Good. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, man, as always, thank you for doing what you do to make my life out here easier doing what I do.
Oh, thank you,
I was over here daydreaming, and all of a sudden you come out wailing friggin' Midnight Rider, man. I'm on this midnight ride up to Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Anyway, is Stanton going to be like the 09 A-Rod? Everybody hates him, but we can't win without him. And the only other thing I want to say tonight, Chris, is when the hell is enough of Daniel Jones going to be enough? Maybe we should ask Brett Long Island that question. Have a good night.
You got it, buddy. Yeah, listen, I don't know if Brett doesn't want to answer that question. But yeah, is Stanton the 09? He's done it more often. It's not fair. As much as I love Alex Rodriguez, and he absolutely won them the 09 championship, to me, he was the biggest key figure and key player in that run through the World Series, without question. You could argue, obviously, CeCe won the ALCS MVP. He was important. Andy Pettit was important. All the starting pitchers were important. Johnny Game was important. Everybody was important. Alex Rodriguez was, without question, the one guy they couldn't have won without in that series. But he also was terrible in every other situation other than, like, the ALDS against Minnesota in 04 and the first three games of that ALCS against the Red Sox in 04. Those are the only six games where he was good prior to 09 and even after 09. Giancarlo Stanton has consistently been, since 2020, their best postseason player, bar none. I've been saying this for a long time. Every time Yankee fans wanted to get on him, every time Yankee fans wanted to ship him out, every time someone was coming up with a cockamamie trade and attaching prospects to it or taking another bad contract and hoping they can convince some other team to take Stanton's money, I always said, look what he does in the postseason. Like, this is not new this year. And yes, the fans hate him. And yes, he's part of the redemption tour that this team has been on through the American League playoffs. The biggest part of it. Gleyber Torres, everybody wanted traded for nothing. Traded for nothing this year. Now, I'll own it that I had no interest in re-signing him, and now you have to at least rethink that. But at least I knew they needed him this year and didn't want him traded, but everybody wanted him gone. Verdugo, I'm screaming about bench him for Dominguez. Even into the postseason, I wanted Dominguez to play. He's come through with big hits. Anthony Volpe, I got on at times this year, looked awful. He's completely zoned in and been the best version of himself in this postseason. I mean, the redemption tour goes on and on. Clay Holmes, I know he had two bad. He gave up a home run, the walk-off home run to Fry, which in that inning he wasn't terrible. He threw one bad pitch. And then he had the miserable outing after being exhausted. But he also was unbelievable for his first seven appearances. He's part of the redemption tour. Like everybody, Aaron Boone, who nobody likes, has done an incredible job this postseason. But yeah, Stanton, I don't know if he's the 09 A-Rod that everybody hates, because honestly, I don't know how you can hate him. Alex Rodriguez was a very hateable guy for many. Right? The pictures at Central Park, whatever, kissing the mirror, sunbathing in the city, the attitude, the fakeness. You know, the demands for the Mets contract. He wanted his own suite and billboards or whatever other crap came out from that conversation. Dating, you know, superstars and not performing in the postseason, right? So, like, he was a little bit more, you know, phony. And then, obviously, you get the steroid stuff before 09 as well. So, there was a lot of reasons to not like Alex Rodriguez. Nobody has handled coming over here as a high-priced, in his situation, trade, but high-priced free agent, high-priced player with expectations. He came off an MVP making all this money, even if the Yankees didn't sign him to the contract. They traded for him. He's making big money, MVP. He's come over here. He's been hurt. He hasn't played much. He struggled in the regular season. He hasn't really lived up to the contract almost at all. And yet nobody has handled it with more grace. Nobody has taken more accountability. Nobody has done what he's done. And this is what really I think Yankee fans should be thrilled about with Giancarlo Stanton. Nobody gets it more how important these games are and how different they are. And you hear him talk about the postseason and how these games are different and how he relishes it. It's almost like Stanton understands, look, my body doesn't allow me to be an MVP over the course of 162. When you combine the idea that I go through slumps, I get my swing gets out of whack a lot, because of my size or whatever the case may be. I'm out of whack a lot. Now I'm injured a lot. I can barely run. I know. Like, this is how I feel he's talking. I know over the course of 162, I will never live up to the money I make. I will never be the MVP player again. I don't play enough games. All that stuff, it sucks, but it is what it is. The one thing I can do is perform in the postseason. The one thing I can do is focus, be my best, and hit home run after home run in the postseason. And that's all he's focused on almost, is getting his swing ready for the postseason. And Judge can carry the team during the regular season. And Juan Soto can carry the team. And Gerrit Cole and all the other stars and high-paid players can carry this team to the playoffs. And then he can put them on their back once they get here. That's his almost his plan. And if you can't respect that, if you can't love that, if you can't forgive all the other stuff now moving forward in the regular season, I never want to hear another complaint about him missing time. I don't want to hear another complaint about him swinging and flailing at sliders in the dirt. I don't want to hear anything else about Giancarlo Stanton ever again. It's over. There should never be another complaint about Giancarlo Stanton. He is untouchable. Mitchell in Fort Lee. What's up, Mitch?
Mr. Big Mac, it's a pleasure to talk to you. What a nice way. The whole year, me and you talked about the Yankees.
Yep.
You said the Yankees are going to make it and everything else.
But I told you.
Everything. Yeah, you did. But Big Mac, there's one thing that you brought up, but there's one last thing. Everything you just said 2 seconds ago, I agree with. But there's one last part to it that you forgot. You know where I'm going with this one, don't you?
No, not really. I forget?
Everyone called up and they wanted someone gone. And guess what? You really want him gone? Mr. Cashman. Brian Cashman, everyone from the fan, even the guys that work on the fan, everyone should get him gone.
Sure, he does not earn and thank you for the call, Mitch. He hasn't earned the right to rebuild this team. No, Brian Cashman's the biggest of the redemption tour right now. There is no doubt about it. He built a team. Say whatever you want. He built a team that has gotten to the World Series, and along the way was perceived as such an enormous favorite that it's almost not even an accomplishment to get here. So you want to get on Brian Cashman? How about that? How about the fact that almost everyone outside of Yankee fans, and even some Yankee fans, but everyone around baseball, all the fans, Met fans, outside fans, whatever fan you are, this Yankee team was so good. So much better than all of its American League counterparts that it's almost not even an accomplishment to make it to the World Series. It was a foregone conclusion because they are the only team that's even any good and could even compete with the top teams in the National League. So he got Juan Soto. He's built another bullpen out of absolutely nothing. We've got a world-class closer right now who was a failed starting pitcher for about 5 or 6 years. One of the worst starting pitchers in the sport is their shutdown closer. Jake Cousins is getting huge outs. I didn't know he existed prior to earlier this year. He traded for Leiter. Everyone hated that move, and he was terrible during the course of the regular season. But who cares? He's getting them big outs when they need him most in the postseason. Clay Holmes traded for a prospect, couldn't cut it in Pittsburgh, was a 5 ERA reliever in Pittsburgh, has come over here and been a 2-time All-Star, and whatever you think of him, one of the better relievers in the American League for the last 3 years with his tenure at the New York Yankees. You've got Tim Hill, who was cut by the Chicago White Sox, getting enormous outs in the postseason. Like, this guy has built a bullpen. Yeah, he spent money on Canely. But, I mean, he has built a bullpen out of thin air that's been as good as any bullpen in the postseason. And right now is probably going to either win them or lose them a World Series championship. That's how important this bullpen is to this New York Yankee team. And he built it out of thin air. So, yes, Brian Cashman is without question the leader of the redemption tour here for the New York Yankees. Joel in Huntington. What's up, Joel?
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Hey, Chris, let me just say that I think you are among the best on the Fan and great at what you do. I listen to you every night. I'm not one to run and pick up the phone usually, but I listen very appreciatively to what you have to say every single night, and I think you're awesome.
Thank you.
I will also say that I am, yes, I am a proud Met fan, and like a lot of other people, I'm hurting right now. I'm the father of two adult Met fans, and I'm the son of two adult Yankee fans, so I'm sandwiched in the middle, and I am a Met fan myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Mets lost fair and square this year. They gave it a good go, and I, you know, that is all good, and I'll be happy to get behind the Yankees as a New Yorker. And
at you.
There you go. How magnanimous can I possibly
be,
right?
That's just tremendous. Right. Good.
So the only thing I got to say, though, and I say this out of complete respect, is your comment a couple of minutes ago about, you know, Jose Iglesias having some time on his hands now to write a song. I love you, man, but I got to say,
was that a bit low?
I was a bit facetious, yeah, and I say that out of respect, you know. I don't say that as being a jerk, but I think it was a little facetious.
Yeah.
You know what?
No, it was a dig. I mean, I don't think it's completely unfair to throw a couple of digs out there. It's having a little bit of fun. Come on.
No, I get it, but also I heard you on many occasions appreciate Jose Iglesias and the spirit and the awesomeness that he brought. Yeah, they fell short, no two ways about it. But you know what? For the fans out there who are still struggling and still hurting and disappointed,
yeah,
I love you, man, but you know, the slightly cheap shot doesn't help. That's
well,
all
I hear you, Joel, but you know what? I'm going to throw him. I've been very fair to the Mets. I'm kind of not thrilled with the Met fan right now for a couple of reasons. I got to be totally honest with you. I'm not thrilled with the Met fan for one, the constant berating of and the constant noise of the Yankees did nothing. And that's what happened. The minute the Mets lost, and even before that, the every comment I make on social media about the Yankees is just completely inundated with Met fans going, oh, they didn't beat anybody. This is a joke. Easiest path to the World Series I've ever seen, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's nonstop. So I'm having a little fun at that, but I've been very... Jose Iglesias is part of the reason why I'm disappointed that Met fans reacted the way they reacted in many ways. Like, you said a lot of the Met fans are hurting, but it's a great year. I think most of the Met fans I've talked to, most of the Met fans who've called, most of the Met fans I've heard on the station have your point of view and don't feel that bad. And immediately, before that final out was made, before that ground ball was fielded and thrown and Alvarez was thrown out at first base, had already transitioned into what a magical year this was, how much fun it was. Oh, gee, golly, I can't wait for the future. We are in great standing. We have a great GM. We have an owner who's going to go out and steal Juan Soto from the Yankees, and everything is wonderful, and we're about to go on this great run, and this will always be a year that we look at so fondly. Like, that was immediately the transition. And Jose Iglesias is part of the reason why I'm like, I don't know. How often do you get a middle infielder, you know, 30-something infielder who's bounced around, come up and hit 340 for you? You know, make a pop hit music song that transforms your team. Like, this doesn't happen. You don't get the seasons that a Tyrone Taylor that they got. You don't get these things. Typically don't happen. You don't go out and sign an entire rotation pretty much of one-year rentals, and they all perform to a degree you couldn't believe. Like, these things don't happen. And next year is going to be completely different. You could have a different first baseman, a different right fielder, a different center fielder, an entire new rotation other than Kodai Senga. Like, the whole thing could be drastically different. And while they could be better, no question, I think they will be better, it doesn't mean they're going to go as far or have the opportunity they had now. And for me, there just wasn't enough, not anger or bitterness, disappointment. There just wasn't enough from the Met fan. And I know that I'm a Yankee fan trying to tell you how do you feel. I get that. It's a little obnoxious. But I know me, I would have been like, oh man, we had an opportunity. And it was just so quick. And to the point now where the 7 line is getting some crap, and I'm sorry. I don't want to jump on the bandwagon. That's typically not my thing. I didn't see it until later in the day, and everybody had their say about it already by the time I noticed it. But yeah, I'm sorry. It's obnoxious to want to have a gathering outside Citi Field to show this group how happy you are. with them and what a wild ride it was, and you're so thankful that you were able to go along on this thing. Like, they didn't accomplish, like, it was a great year, no doubt. It was a great year. This isn't a high school football team that lost the championship and you guys want to show up to show your support at a pep rally? These are major league players. It's the New York Mets. They lost the series. They had a great year. I agree with all of that. I just wish the Met fan would, you know, take a minute to be disappointed, because I almost think the team deserves it. You want to show respect to this team? Don't show up and give them applause. Be pissed off they didn't finish it off, because they were good enough to. Like I've said a couple times, it almost feels disrespectful to this team that you're so quick to dismiss their failure. And I know failure's a bit strong, but they lost the series. Like, you're so quick to dismiss that they didn't capture the opportunity they had. It's almost like you didn't think they could have, when they absolutely could have. They deserve your bitterness. They deserve your disappointment. They've earned you to be pissed off that they didn't finish it off, because they were good enough to. Everyone keeps saying, oh, the Mets, oh, it was just, nobody expected us to be here. Nobody expected them to be here. You know, nobody expected them to be here, but more importantly, no one expected them to transform themselves into a team that deserved to be there. That's what happened. They transformed themselves into a group that was good enough to be there. They were good enough to win that series. I don't think the Dodgers were just far superior. It might have played out that way in a handful of games. And the pitching definitely hit a wall at the end. I understand. I'm not saying you should feel anything other than a real sense of, wow, what a great run. But just not a day after. And I certainly don't think that you want to go to the ballpark, see them get off a bus, or see them clean out their lockers, and stand there and give them a slow clap. That's a bit much, no? Are we that starved for any bit of success? I think that's a bit much. And I know that's been said a million times. I don't need to harp on it, but I'm sorry that the tweet about wanting to get together and show this team your appreciation, they get your appreciation. You showed up to the building. You were there. City Field was crazy. City Field was an intense atmosphere. It was awesome in that building. That's how you show it. You don't have a lemonade stand set up for them when they walk out after cleaning out their lockers. 888-808-1019. We'll get more into the World Series. We can still talk Mets in the end of the season. God knows we got to talk about the Juan Soto contract. Spotrac came out with what they deem the contract to be worthy. We got how many? Let's see who else can write an article. We got Ken Rosenthal. Actually, I don't. I gotta find out who actually wrote the article. I saw he promoted it, but it was for The Athletic. So The Athletic is writing stories about Juan Soto's contract and how he's going to go to the Mets. You got Joel Sherman writing a story about how the Mets have to swoop in and take Juan Soto. We got Bob Clappish writing a story about how, what a great moment. He finally had his Yankee moment. What a huge home run from Soto. But he's going to go to the Mets next year. Like, I'm sorry. Does the World Series start on Friday? Is Juan Soto going to be playing right field, batting second for the New York Yankees in game one of the World Series on Friday? Why are we so, I know we have a couple of days in between. Why are we so hyper-focused? I know the Mets season just ended. Why are we so concerned about where Juan Soto's going to play next year? This is exactly why, if you follow me on Twitter, why I tweet out Juan Soto is the Yankee. Because anything else is just noise. Anything else is just a conversation that I don't know why we're dying to have. But to quote the great Craig Carton, who's going to get inducted into the New York Broadcasters Hall of Fame later today, I'll be your Huckleberry if you want to be. 888-808-101. We could talk about Juan Soto. We could talk about where he's going to go. We could talk about how much money he's going to make. But I'll also take your calls on what we think he's going to do in the World Series that starts on Friday.